This podcast is brought to you by Rock My Wedding, the UK's most influential wedding brand.
Hello.
Bonjour.
And welcome to the podcast.
It's a bit French today.
Every day for you, you wish you were French.
Yeah, true, true.
Today, Becky and I are joined by Sarah Richardson, founder of Leafy Couture, one of our favourite florists.
Hi, Sarah.
Leafy Couture is a member of our handpicked supply directory, The List, which you don't, if you don't already know about it, you can find it at rockmywedding.co.uk/the-list.
You can.
Sarah is here to talk all about wedding flowers and answer lots and lots of questions.
Loads. Thanks very much. There is loads, so we'll do as many as we can.
Sarah, tell us a little bit about how you got into floristry.
Okay, so I started, originally I did a degree, sociology degree.
But so I not connected it. Whatsoever.
No, it was like, for me, I really enjoyed learning about loads of different things and I like learning. But yeah, I didn't really know what I wanted to do after it, but I was definitely missing that creative. I want to make something. I want to make people happy ultimately, which is why I did a sociology degree. Decided I couldn't be a social worker because I just wanted to take everyone home and look after them. So I couldn't do that. So then, looked at different things that I could do and floristry was something that just looked appealing.
Yeah.
So I went to college for 2 years and worked in different shops and then suddenly realised that actually, if you want your own style and you want to do it, then set up your own business. So
you finished your degree?
I finished my degree at Newcastle University. I did a few temping jobs. Absolutely terrible. I worked in a bank. Absolutely terrible. Yeah, didn't really like being in a uniform either.
Just didn't work for me.
Yeah.
Looked awful. And how many years have you been doing wedding floristry for now specifically?
So I've had my business since 2006. And I kind of worked for a few other people 2 years before that. So
you had a couple of years working for other people, then you set your...
So 14 years for myself.
Was that terrifying?
Well, I had three jobs. Three jobs to keep it going. So I was working in a pub, working in a wedding dress shop, which obviously was brilliant because I had a target market.
Yeah, clever you.
So, doing loads of different jobs to kind of, get the ball rolling.
And then took the plunge.
And then went for it, And my first job was working for Ministry of Sound in a nightclub.
Oh, really?
Doing flowers for the nightclub, which was great. It was £100 a week contract. So I thought, go for it. But unfortunately, I couldn't drive then, so I had to just beg, borrow and steal lifts from everybody to get to deliver my flowers.
And how many members of staff have you got now?
So at the moment, I've got 4 members of staff that kind of are kind of our core, dip in and dip out. And then I've got 11 freelancers in summer. Gosh, when it's really busy, we have the most is probably 11.
Yeah, because you must just be absolutely flat out at that time of year.
Okay. Well, it kind of starts March and ends in December, really. Sometimes January, February.
In terms of peak, which is just...
season.
Yeah. No, exactly.
Thankfully, it's great.
Yeah.
So before we go into the 157 questions, in terms of, I suppose, booking a wedding florist, there are brides and grooms that will have quite a clear vision and there are those, like me, who didn't really have a clue, at the time. So you might know, oh, I like the look of that, or I like the look of that, but I don't really know... sort of what works, what I can have at my wedding, how much things cost, which really, I suppose, is one of the main points of actually booking a consultation with a wedding florist, isn't it really? So that you can discuss your ideas with them and talk about your budget and try and sort of create your vision with them.
Yeah, definitely. So we encourage people to come and we kind of set out, and when they first inquire with us, we have a rough price guide so that people kind of can start planning in their head, because most people have never been married before. They don't know how much things cost. So we send out a price guide and it kind of tells you what you're kind of roughly looking at.
As in a bouquet is
absolutely. And then we encourage them to kind of have a Pinterest board if possible, or bring pictures of things they've liked, or save pictures on Instagram or whatever. But we also kind of encourage people, if you're going to come to a flower appointment, don't bring your 5 bridesmaids and your mother-in-law and your mum and your husband-to-be. Maybe just keep it to you and someone else.
I think that we found that's the case with most things, haven't we? When it comes to planning, dress shopping, outfit shopping, whatever it might be. Sometimes too many cooks and all that. Yeah. It's just can be a bit too much.
And generally flower shops are quite small places.
Oh so yeah, that's
have,
true.
All of those people
We've actually got a post that I'll link to in the show notes as well for questions to take to ask your florist at your initial appointment with them as well, which I think everyone will find really useful. So I'll make sure that's in the show notes so you can refer back to that.
So what has been, would you say, the most asked for floral decor that you've had in the last 12 months? Or most popular?
Installations. People are wanting something like mega. A bit of a wow moment for their wedding. Obviously, everyone wants like a bouquet and they want that to be really beautiful. But generally, I think the focus is on is like, what else can we do? Like, what's going to be the thing that people are going to photograph? As crazy as it sounds, like what's going to be the statement backdrop or what's going to be like the hanging element or, you know, that's what people generally want, I think.
Yeah. So would you say now rather than have, I suppose, having like lots of little bits and pieces, they tend to have that one sort of...
Yeah, definitely. And I think I would encourage that, to be honest, rather than trying to stretch your budget out to little bits that people aren't going to remember. Like in a church, for example, I would say have a big arrangement at the front rather than lots of little pew ends. You know, people are going to look and be wowed by this big arrangement that you wouldn't see in normal life compared to lots of little bits.
Yeah, that's interesting actually, isn't it? We, one listener has asked about church decor actually because she said that she can't find very much inspiration for how to decorate the church with flowers. And like, I think that's a really interesting point because actually no one's looking at the pew ends, are they?
No, not really. Like, no one goes to a wedding and takes a picture of a pew end often, do they really?
Sure. And because of the general, I suppose, you just walk past it.
Yeah.
You're looking for where to sit, aren't
you? I mean, it can be lovely, obviously, because if you've got, you know, a big budget and you've got endless budget, then, you know, put flowers everywhere by all means and have them so it smells amazing as you walk down the aisle. But I think as dresses get bigger as well, people perhaps don't want to have something direct candles or, you know, fire and things direct down the aisle.
Yeah, that's true.
And are there any flowers that you dislike working with that people ask, like high maintenance flowers, I call them?
Drama queens, peonies. Peonies are the drama queens.
Oh, are they?
Yeah.
What makes them dramatic? What do they do?
So generally when peonies arrive, they're kind of like a bullet, like a solid mass. And then they take a bit of time. They like to like relax a bit and then they just open and are beautiful. But I always have to buy extra in to make sure I get them to that perfect.
I suppose that's it. Yeah. Knowing when they're going
to. Yeah. They've got to be perfect. You know, you don't want them to wilt on a wedding day, but you want them to be. I don't really like working with gypsophilia. I know it's been a big trend for lots of people, but it smells really bad for me. Yeah. It smells really bad. And it smells a bit like wet dog. So, without all the bonus of having a dog. But so if you've got a mass of it in the workshop, it's just not where I want to be.
Yeah.
So we try and discourage people from working with it.
Yeah.
From
maybe a little bit of it, but
so
not
maybe
like
don't have an installation of gypsophilia.
Yeah. I've heard of some florists.
That would be
like
Sarah's worst nightmare.
Some florists like Febreze it. Like,
never.
No, really? No joke.
Do they? Yeah. It's
brilliant.
A difficult one, isn't it? Because I think gyps one of those things that people think when they're going to do their own flowers, it's dead cheap.
Yeah, it's cheap. Although the nice stuff isn't actually that cheap.
I guess it's one of those things that people think instantly because it doesn't die.
Yeah, it doesn't
like
die.
Like it lasts for ages, doesn't it?
Yeah.
And they think I can get it a good week or whatever before.
Yeah, and not stress.
Put it in a few bottles and stuff and get your Febreze out.
Get your Febreze out. And on that, well, not on the Febreze note, but on the high maintenance bouquet note. Because if it's really warm, which everyone worries about the rain in the UK, but let's face it, we've had some really hot summers. Is there sort of recommendations or flowers that you'd say for people to have if it might be quite warm? Because what you don't want to do is have to walk around and find a vase like every 20 minutes. Because that happened to me.
Yeah,
I had hydrangea before, and by the time my photos, it didn't matter, but by the time my photos were in the evening, it was quite wilty.
Yeah.
Because I just didn't want to have to like put it in some water, go and find your bouquet, pick it, put it somewhere else, that kind of thing.
Yeah, I think hydrangea is definitely one of those. Lily of the Valley as well. It's so beautiful, but it's so expensive and it needs water. It just wilts quite quickly.
Oh, wow.
But yeah, it's beautiful.
Yeah.
I guess it's setting people's expectations as well.
Yeah.
But yeah, hydrangeas, sweet peas, stocks, a lot of the beautiful wedding flowers, they're like water, you know, so.
I suppose the blousy sort of flowers.
Yeah.
It sounds like.
Yeah, maybe you have to have two bouquets and then you can have like an extra one for when, when you have a bit of
rest. Oh, Sarah, on the upsell.
have a quick swap in the ladies' toilet. Put my lip gloss on, swap my bouquet over to the one that's more fresh.
Yeah. The royal family had five, I think, made for like the one.
Wow.
Yeah, I think so. Just to make sure it was perfect.
Sarah, you know all the tricks and tips and goss.
What were her flowers? Because they looked a bit like
Lily of the Valley. Who are we talking about? Kate or Megan?
Yeah, Kate.
Kate had, she had Lily Fall, I think she had Love in the Mist. She had a bit of Myrtle.
Myrtle.
Yeah. And what did Megan? I don't actually know.
I know her bridesmaids had a lot of Astilbe, which is beautiful. It's like feathery and gorgeous.
Yes, I love Astilbe.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Not again, a bit of a drama queen, likes to wilt quite quickly. But beautiful.
Well, there
learning all these names as well. Myrtle, that's my favourite so far.
Can we talk about colour, please? Because we're noticing that lots and lots and lots of weddings have green and white, which is very elegant and very classic. And you know what we say here, obviously do what you want.
Yeah.
But I would like to see some colour in 2020.
Yeah. I'm a big fan of colour.
Did you find last year that you did a lot of...
We did quite a bit of colour. No, we did quite a lot of colour as well. I guess it was a bit mixed between either green and white or colour.
Yeah.
But I really try and encourage people to push colour.
Yeah.
And that was one of the questions I got asked actually when I was asking, like, ask questions about your florist or whatever. Yeah. Was colour. And I think it can just make a really happy event. You know, having colour and warming the whole situation up.
Yeah, I think you're right. That's the right word. It's adding warmth, isn't it? Because it looks beautiful and botanical and all of that. But sometimes it can look a bit cold.
Yeah.
And just adding that touch of colour is...
Definitely.
My sister did that. She went for the whole sort of classic green and white. And then she chucked some coral peonies in. My maintenance.
Does that sound about right?
But it made it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Beautiful.
Yeah.
Because you did that with your bridesmaids with the colours, weren't they?
I had everything bright pink, blue, purple. Yeah. Because all my outfit choices was all like white and ivory.
Yeah.
So it was just, you know, which is from a flower perspective, so that brings us on to that really, isn't it? Is it's how you incorporate your floral choices with what you're wearing and what
someone's
your
asked
theme
that as well.
Is and all that kind of stuff. So if you're going for like a really sort of ethereal floaty gown, you can pick flowers that are going to complement that, can't you?
Yeah.
And vice versa. Or if you're having something very sort of structured and modern, flowers that will
And I think it, from the questions we've had, a lot of it sounds like brides are a bit like, well, how am I supposed to know what I'm supposed to have? And I guess off the back of what you've just said, if you can explain to your florist what your gown is like, what your outfit is like, then, well, you know what you're doing.
Yeah, absolutely.
Don't you? So you could...
You look at the shape of the dress. Yeah. You look at, you know, so if you've got like a fitted gown or you've got a really trailing floaty gown and speak to your bride and see, like, one of the first questions we ask is, how do you want your day to feel?
Yeah.
So if you do want it to be like...
That's
quite...
exactly it, isn't it? How do you want it to feel? Not necessarily even look. How do you want it to look, actually.
Yeah. Because if you want it to be all like relaxed and floaty, then we will definitely tailor it, you know, have more like pretty little textures and scent and things. Whereas if you want it to be quite formal, then that will be reflected in the flowers.
Yeah.
You know, and the flowers do set the tone of a room, definitely.
Yeah.
And I think people tend to worry about not knowing, and that's our job, isn't it?
Like,
it's okay to go to a florist and not have a clue, because why would you?
Absolutely.
Like, I think you've never done it before, have you? Like,
yeah, and people do know what they want, I think. The further you go down the process, people are definitely like, I love that, I don't like that.
Yeah.
You know, and you can tell, you know, when people light up and you can see them visibly get excited.
Then that's when you know.
Yeah, and that's a great part of our job, isn't it? You know, you're building a picture in people's heads of what they of what they want.
And when someone comes to you and they're like, actually, you know, this is my budget and I definitely know I want X, Y, Z. So say I definitely want a bouquet.
Yeah.
Definitely want three bouquets for a bridesmaid. Definitely want like a main sort of floral piece in my reception room or ceremony. And then from a florist perspective, I say it's a case of, well, you could potentially recommend sort of flowers that are cheaper per stem if they want to make their budget go further. And then items like on the sort of the periphery, if you like buttonholes and things like that, I suppose they can just go without.
To an extent. Definitely. I think focus on bouquet. I mean, it's the most like photographed thing, isn't it, of the day. It's the most photographed arrangement you'll ever have.
Yeah.
And have what you want for that. And then say with your bridesmaids, you could always just have something a bit cheaper. You know, take an element, a few hydrangea or like something that's in season or mask can always look really beautiful.
Mm-hmm.
But focus on the main bridal things, I think. And then pew ends, buttonholes, that kind of thing.
Yeah.
Buttonholes, I don't know.
Do you find that you do less and less of those or?
Yeah, I'm not. I'd quite like to not do any buttonholes ever, to be honest. Like, you know, from a financial point of view, they're great, obviously, you know, but from getting up on a morning, you know, as a florist, you know, spending a lot of time.
You can't put those in water, can you?
Well, you can't.
It depends on the style. Some people like to have them quite undone at the moment, so we deliver them in water.
And
then they put them on, more of a relaxed feel.
Right.
My members of my team absolutely adore making buttonholes.
Yeah.
And so I will definitely delegate them
to
them. And they can make some really beautiful, gorgeous little arrangements.
So what we're saying is if you're as well. If your budget can't stretch for everything, focus on those main things, which would be your bouquet and perhaps that installation that is going to make the most impact.
Yeah.
I've split the questions, the reader questions, down to some categories to make it a little bit easier to answer. Because things cross over, like we've probably already answered a few questions anyway, mm-hmm. but I thought we'd start with the sort of environmental and sustainable based questions, because it's obviously something that's really on a lot of people's minds these days. Mm-hmm. Someone is saying, and we've talked about this before, but can you reuse ceremony flowers for your wedding breakfast? And any tips on arrangements that do well at being repurposed from ceremony to reception, breakfast, whatever it might be?
Yeah, absolutely. Can we use them? And we would always encourage people to reuse things. If flowers are kind of in a container, it makes life a lot easier.
Right.
Yeah. So, or like a big urn arrangement, something that can be easily moved from a church or a marquee. You know, to your marquee.
Yeah.
Yeah, we try our best. Or plants. We use quite a lot of plants.
Oh, that's interesting.
Because they are easy to move. Obviously, they're still growing, so it's good for the environment. But if you've got them, like hydrangea plants down your aisle or, you know, something like that,
sure,
they could be then moved on to.
Transfer them over.
And make nice gifts as well, I suppose.
Absolutely.
Because someone's asked, like, what do you do with the flowers after the wedding? But essentially, that's down to the bride and groom, isn't it? Because they've bought them.
Yeah, you don't take them back, do you? Like, that's it. You've paid for your flowers and they're yours to do with whatever you like.
We've had a few different options that things have done. So one couple last summer, they took all their flowers to a hospice. So they broke them all down, and then they took them. And then we had another one, they took them to old people's homes so they could, you know, remake the flowers and have a nice day playing with flowers. And
it's
really lovely. So that's really nice to do.
Yeah, that's a really nice alternative, isn't it? And like you said, Charlotte, you can always give them as gifts. Yeah. And can't you take them with you?
Absolutely. With you. Yeah. And especially if you're a florist, you don't want to go back to a clear down, you know, the next morning and see any flowers left. You know what? You want them to have been appreciated and loved. And
And reused. Yeah. And again, on the subject of reusing, somebody has asked, how do you utilise bridesmaid bouquets for the top table?
So we hire vases out if you're a bride, buy a vase and have them along the top table. So then the flowers can just sit in.
And you just simply plonk them in.
I did that.
Yeah. It makes total sense because your bridesmaids, because they're beautiful, you want to kind of, and by that time they would be a bit thirsty. So it's good to.
Yeah, it's a good idea to get them into some sort of water.
But I think it always looks nice if the container is not clear. You know, so you can't see like the ribbon and the ribbon getting a bit wet. You know, if they're like a solid container.
That's a good point.
Yeah.
And you know, in terms of when we're talking about repurposing flowers from ceremony to wedding breakfast, is that something you would do? Do you stay on site if brides and grooms?
We can do. Yeah. It depends if you've got some nice ushers, you know, like willing ushers to do it.
Yeah.
But we also provide that service as well.
Oh, right. Yeah. Okay.
And I think you do have to think about that in your budget as well, because you have to pay then florists to sit there with a van or whatever to then move your flowers. If you have a lot, then I would suggest you do that.
Yeah.
So that they're going to be moved and to look at that like the best.
Like they're supposed to.
Yeah, they're supposed to.
So you would only do one wedding a day, essentially?
No, we don't. We do.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Oh, we would take probably a maximum of three.
That's why she's got 1,500 staff.
Yeah. I suppose it's not, I'm just sitting here thinking it's just you, but no, obviously.
We've got a team, and I think I've always had two florists on a team.
Right.
To go to a wedding. And obviously a bigger wedding, you have more people, but I would never just have one florist go to deliver. So we've had things like trees across roads. We've had cars break down. We've had everything. So I might not have made as much money along the way, but I've always had two people to deliver.
Yeah.
And so it's that whole thing as well with the budgeting. Actually, if you're repurposing your ceremony flowers for your reception, then you're saving. So actually to pay out for a florist to stay for a couple of, it still might work out quite a bit cheaper. So it's all like considering all those factors really, isn't it?
Yeah, definitely.
How do you feel about Oasis, as in using it, as in the foamy stuff? Because one of our listeners has said, is it okay to ask a florist not to use it, or is that rude?
It's not rude, and it's such a hot topic in floristry at the moment. I think the environment, floristry generally isn't a massively brilliant profession to be in if you're trying to be environmentally conscious. Mm-hmm. You know, flowers are grown in greenhouses with lots of water, they're shipped across the world.
Yeah.
But I think we are definitely trying as a business not to use as much foam as possible. And the RHS have just banned it from their
And that's the Royal Horticultural Society.
Yes.
Check you out. Charlie Dimmock over there.
Thanks. she's wearing a bra.
I was just going to say, but yes, just
yeah, I've got a bra on. She does have a bra on. So we know.
So ideally, no, I don't like using foam. It's not great for the environment. It breaks down. It goes into the water table, which is terrible for the environment.
Right.
But some installations and things, it's kind of necessary. So ideally, don't want to use it. And you can ask your florist, but then you have to be prepared for them to say, well, you can't have this tall arrangement full of hydrangea then.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? So if you're flexible as to what you want, then definitely.
Okay. Last question on sort of environmental and sustainability is that, do you work with dried flowers and are they more or less economical than the real deal?
We do. Yeah, we have worked with dried flowers.
They're very, very popular, aren't they?
Yeah, right they're now? Super popular. I think it's a hard one because they aren't cheap. They aren't cheap. The process to kind of dry them and make them look beautiful.
Mm.
And obviously the flowers have been purchased or grown in the first place, so they're not.
Yeah, the process is still sort of the same, but with an extra added bit of drying them out.
Yeah. Lots of people like them. I guess they last forever, so you can have them on your shelf at home forever. Maybe that's the... But you can mix them in with fresh and dried as well for a certain kind of look.
Yeah, that's true. And so it's not necessarily going to work out any cheaper doing it that way.
Well, no, because you have to grow them and then you have to dry them.
Yeah. So there you go.
Extra work.
I wonder if the thought process of that is because the misconception is that they've already been used.
Yeah, I know what you mean.
As like, say, I don't know.
Like they were already.
And then you can somehow rescue that bouquet and then dry it and then reuse the flowers. Yeah. But obviously that's not
Yeah, logical. No, I know what you mean.
They're dried in a certain way to like retain all the colour or...
Yeah.
There's like bleached flowers as well. That's a trend. But again, that's really bad for the environment because the flowers just like literally bleached till there's nothing there, just a shape. Do you know what I mean?
Oh, gosh.
There's no colour. You'll see them in a lot of like Instagram, Pinteresty pictures, but they're terrible for the environment. And they smell really strong. I don't know why it's all about smells. Because all the flowers smell nice.
It just make a big...
But they smell of bleach.
Yeah, it makes
Your day away, but not bleached,
please.
Flowers that
please.
Smell and are bad for the environment.
Yeah.
Thank you and goodbye.
Right, should we move on to some sort of budgety-based questions?
Yes, let's.
Now? Go for it.
Where is the best place to buy flowers from if you're doing your own?
I would say if you're doing your own, then have a look at locally grown flowers. That could be a really good way of doing it. So there's a website called Flowers from the Farm, and it's a gathering of loads of like local growers. And then you can go on there and you can buy by the bucket or you can buy by the stem. And that's it's really good for the environment.
Oh, I'll pop a link to that in the show notes. Flowers from the Farm.
Flowers from the Farm. Oh, that's nice. I'm not a member, but I do use their members. That's really good. Or I would speak to a florist because for your wedding, you want to have really beautiful flowers. Ultimately, you know, we do a lot of people, they just say, I want to do my own and this is my budget. Can you get the flowers in? It's the best quality. A florist is going to know where to get the best flowers from. So
yeah, that's a good idea, isn't it?
I say, because that moves us on to what we were talking about earlier with some listeners have asked, like, you know, because they're wedding flowers, is that what hikes the price up? And like you were just saying, well, no, actually, because people, if they want to, can just get the flowers from you, i.e. almost like pay per stem and do it themselves. Because there's what people have to remember is when they're booking a florist or any professional wedding supplier is that you're paying for the service.
Absolutely.
And you're paying for their experience and you're paying for their plan B.
Yeah,
which
danger
I'm
money
sure
as well.
You can give us an example of that as well.
Yeah, so I think if you're going to buy a beautiful bunch of flowers, it's very different. Like, yes, you'll get a gorgeous, beautiful bouquet. Here you are. Thank you. If you're getting a wedding bouquet from someone, it's the time they've sat down with you, the time they've taken to understand the feel that you want for your day and how it's going to be and your colour scheme. And that might change as well. It's not just that. It's the over the 18-month period, you might change your mind. So that bouquet isn't just one bouquet. It's a thought process.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's not just an initial consultation. No. And then it's like, right, that's it.
Absolutely.
I'll see you in 12 months.
Yeah. And it's also on the morning, the flowers, you know, our flowers are delivered in water in a beautiful gift bag. You know, we take them out. We show the bride how to hold them. People don't know how to hold bouquets.
No,
so it's all of that level of service as well.
And also in terms of like the transportation and getting there.
The setup.
So you know. Absolutely. And making sure that the bride has got that perfect bouquet on the morning. It's a lot you've got to think about planning the routes and, you know, thank goodness for satellite navigation when you've got a marquee in a field, you know, in the middle of nowhere to get to. But it's also making sure that your florist is in control of your day and making sure you're getting exactly what you want and that's what you're paying for.
And talking about marquees and fields, Sarah was telling us earlier that once she went to a wedding reception where the marquee was on a hill. And therefore, all the tables were on the wonk. And they had thought they were going to get big vases full of flowers, didn't they, for their centerpieces for their tables. But had they have had those big vases, that they would have ended up on the floor.
Yeah, that's the thing. It's having
so
that.
You had a plan B, didn't you, for that?
Absolutely. And that's it, like as if you just had an alternative that you could just, whoa, that's not going to work. Let's whip them out at the back of the van instead. Yeah. It's all those.
It's all having that and having, having the processes in place and the security, to make sure your client gets exactly what they want.
Yeah, definitely. Somebody wants to know, does more foliage make it cheaper?
I think this is definitely a misconception. Foliage is really expensive, and beautiful foliage is definitely worth the money, but they're not cheaper than flowers. Not really, no.
No, just on a par, really.
Yeah, and I think some of the really gorgeous varieties, it's just as beautiful as flowers, but definitely not cheaper.
No, that's good to know.
Is doing bud vases cheaper than having a more traditional centrepiece? Well, that's all swings and roundabouts, because it depends how many bud vases you have,
and who's going to wash them and clean
them.
And what flowers are in them. Absolutely. You know, you can be paying up to £6 a head for a really beautiful David Austin gorgeous rose.
Yeah.
So £6 and you've got 10 of them.
And then you've got the hire of the bud vases, or the purchase of the vases.
Absolutely. Yeah. The setup, installation, collection of the vases.
Yeah.
So not always.
It's really about getting a quote, isn't it, from your...
Yeah, absolutely.
Just chatting to your florist. I mean, absolutely. I'm sure you love speaking to people about what you can potentially do with their budgets and stuff. I think people feel like they can't just call a florist.
Yeah, it's a question we always ask, what's your budget? Because I don't want to sell a dream and then they not be able to, you don't want to let people down.
Yeah, there's nothing worse.
And it's our job to be creative as florists to make that vision come alive, no matter what the budget is.
Yeah, and I guess you always offer an alternative as well.
Absolutely.
If somebody comes with, they want the David Austins, but actually it's way out their budget.
Yeah.
You're always going to give
an season.
Or quite, exactly.
So therefore it's mega expensive.
Seasonal is key when you're looking at budget, definitely, and quality.
Yeah.
So are there types of flowers and greenery that do keep the cost down? Like, is there a general range that you say, well, actually, or not? Again, is it seasonally dependent?
Definitely seasonal dependent. Yeah, definitely. And if things are in season, then the quality will be amazing and there'll be an abundance of them. So it's much better for a florist to use things in season. But don't have really gorgeous garden roses all over your wedding. If you're on a budget, just have them in your bouquet. You know what I mean? So that's a good way of doing it.
Yeah.
Just focus all the really beautiful things on the really important things. And then bigger arrangements you can use.
Whatever's cheaper in that season,
sort of thing. And on that, I suppose, is there flowers to avoid or to have in small amounts that are particularly expensive? I know you mentioned earlier ranunculus, which we love here.
Everyone loves ranunculus.
But they're
so
expensive, aren't they?
But I think it's your wedding day. Sometimes you have to have a little bit of what you want.
Again, it's just this whole thing of being aware of what costs the most and where you can sort of, I suppose, have those flowers in the places that are going to be seen the most.
And photographed as well. That's the other thing. You know, if you on cakes, for example, you could have a few of the same flowers that are in your bouquet on a cake, and then that kind of will be photographed and enjoyed, and it's a focal place, isn't it?
Yeah.
Whereas in a big arrangement or a big table arrangement, people aren't going to be looking for, you might have something cheaper.
Leads us nicely onto decor and styling ideas, because the first question on this list is, what are the best flowers or greenery to decorate a wedding cake?
God, that was a seamless link, wasn't it?
Ooh. Thank you. Anyone would have thought I planned it.
Gosh, so wedding cakes, I think things that generally don't mind being out of water.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Right.
So it's like flowers in your hair, something that's quite happy to be in a warmish environment.
Right.
Roses, spray roses, that kind of thing.
Right, but berries and things like that.
Yeah, nothing poisonous is good.
Oh yeah, true. Yeah. Oh, don't listen to me, folks.
So speaking to the cake makers and seeing how they are going to attach them, or you were, to attach them. But nothing poisonous.
Yeah, and is that something you would set up on the day? You would expect the cake to already be there, and then once you've put everything out, you'd just pop a few flowers.
And we'd liaise with the cake maker as well. That's always good to kind of liaise and work together with how it's going to be set up and how it's going to be done.
Yeah.
But we did do a fabulous wedding cake and then shared it everywhere. We're so proud of it. And then someone messaged and went, they're really poisonous. And we were like, oh my gosh. And it was okay, this is something we need to really look into.
Yeah, that's really important, isn't it?
Because I wouldn't want to poison everyone.
Yeah.
quite... Same with mistletoe. So a client asked us to put mistletoe on every napkin.
Oh, yeah.
It's really poisonous. We're like,
you can't
poison everyone at your wedding.
I never knew that.
Yeah. Don't eat it, which is crazy because you're supposed to kiss underneath it, aren't you? Yeah.
Oh, wow. Kiss into the poisonous plants.
I know we've already briefly talked about church decor towards the start of the episode, but is there anything else people can use to decorate their church?
Yeah, church is really important. Generally, people who get married in churches don't always go to church all the time.
Right.
So it's a good idea to befriend the church ladies that do church flowers. That's really important.
Oh, right.
Get them on side. And also be really respectful of the church and work out what's expected. So some churches, you're not allowed to put anything on the altar. It has to be in front of the altar.
Okay.
Especially a lot of Catholic churches, it has to be on the floor in front of. Can't be on the top. Huens, if you were going to do a bit of DIY, don't attach anything with like tape that's going to rip off the polish or anything. Sure. And if there's any like religious holidays, make sure that sometimes they want flowers left, sometimes they want them all out, you know, straight after the wedding.
Okay.
So that's something to think about and who's going to do that.
But you'd suggest sort of urns are the best, like big urn type things
urns.
Are the best ways to do it. Like really traditional,
beautiful.
Isn't it?
Yeah. Super traditional. But you can make them look really modern, quite asymmetric, you know, whatever you want to do with them.
Yeah.
And then things outside look beautiful. There's not always a way to attach to a church door. So you can do like, you know, we love doing floral columns outside churches.
Okay.
They're so beautiful. So
that's a floral column.
I love a floral
Sounds
column.
Lovely.
If brides and or grooms want to do their own wedding flowers, but they don't necessarily have any experience or have a clue, like I wouldn't.
Yeah.
Leafy Couture, for example, offers like online courses, which is a lot less of an investment, isn't it, than having your wedding flowers
absolutely.
Done?
Absolutely. Yeah. And I think I don't want to discourage people from doing their own flowers. You know, it's I do flowers because I love doing flowers. So I don't want to discourage people from doing it. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah. Finding enjoyment in it.
Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. So, yeah. So we have online courses so people can learn how to do it properly rather than just winging it on the day or the day before and, you know, going to see flowers that are half dead. Nobody wants that for the wedding day. So if you can learn how to do it and how to process it and how to look after them and then yeah, why not?
And is that like a subscription thing or how does it work?
Yeah, so we have a subscription service. So they pay, it's like £18 a month. And on there, there's lots of different things, how to make bridal bouquets, how to make hair pieces, how to make an urn or a table centre. Lots of different things for people to learn.
And you can just pick and choose which of those you want to do that are
applicable absolutely.
For
you. So they're all available. And then you just go on and it's just filmed. It's just me making it, showing you what to do, talking about the flowers. And we tell you how to kind of condition them, how to look after the flowers so you're getting the most out of them.
Yeah.
And then, step by step, I'm there making it and showing you what to do.
Oh, that's fab.
Yeah, it's good.
We'll link to that in the show notes.
We will link to that, indeed.
Thank you.
Absolutely. Thank you. Okay, somebody would like to know, what's the best base for a DIY suspended floral hoop thing? By that, I think they mean like a chandelier.
Absolutely.
That you might see in a marquee or a barn or something like that.
So it depends on the size of what said place is. So if you're going to make something quite floaty light, then you could have like something wooden or a hula hoop is quite good.
Right.
People use like hula hoops. If it's something that's big and heavy, I would definitely get a professional in because if you've got like the, you know, a marquee with like 200 of your closest personal friends, you don't really want anything dropping on your head. So something floaty light is better for that kind
of
thing.
If
you're going to do it yourself. Yeah,
definitely. That's good advice. Just going to end on with a few general questions that we had. The first one is about growing your own flowers. Someone says, I want to grow some flowers of my own. Is this sensible? And any advice of where to start? I'd like to use a professional to do my bouquet, but maybe I could do some decor or confetti with my own. Because you grow some of your own, don't you?
Yeah, so my fabulous parents grow. Yeah. We have a cutting garden. And we grow a lot of dahlia, scabious, like flowers, beautiful flowers. Seasonal flowers is the way to go if you're going to grow your own.
Right, there you go. Tip number one.
Yeah, tip number one. I would say definitely try and find a course, you know, like a
okay.
Yeah, so a lot of horticulturalists, you know, just Google as your friend, have a little look in a cutting flowers course. There's quite a lot around.
Yeah.
And yeah, I think that's a good idea.
That'll teach you then how to like sew them and all of that.
Yeah, how
sort
to sew
of
them. And I think that's a really good thing to do. Go to professional, definitely. And then aim low. and have a backup generally because this country is really hard with the weather. It's really hard to predict. And if we have like a really warm spring, all the spring flowers will come out. You know, do you know what I mean?
Yeah, sure.
So
yeah.
I think just be flexible in your approach and make sure you have a backup plan. It can be really fabulous growing your own flowers and really rewarding, but I think it needs to be like the cherry on the top.
Right. And that sort of leads on to somebody asking about how far in advance they should be looking to book you.
Totally. Probably 18 months. I mean, it varies really. We have had like people like a few months in advance, but generally it's about 18 months.
It must depend on your availability massively. Absolutely. And whether it's like a summer Saturday is likely to be more booked up than a Thursday in February.
Yeah,
I'm just thinking, I know we have a big range of engagements, don't we? We know from stats and things, we've got couples who are engaged for 2 years. Some couples are only engaged for 4 months. And if that is the case, 4 months, can they still book you?
Absolutely.
As long as there's availability, obviously, but you can work within a short time scale.
Absolutely. And sometimes it's more fun like that because people don't change their mind three times. You know, they're like, I want this, I'm getting married, this is what I want, just go for it. Or people go, right, I'm getting married in 2 months. Here's £3,000, just do my flowers.
Right.
Do you know what I mean? And then you've got creative freedom and there's no big lodge run out, stressy.
That's good to know. I think that will make people feel a bit more settled that actually it doesn't need to be this big in advance thing.
No, absolutely.
They can approach you. And it's, I guess I'm just thinking about how long it takes to order flowers in and things like that if you have to do that, but that's all relatively quick.
Yeah, super. I think generally we can get flowers within like 2 days. From Holland.
You know, the week before.
So right. Yeah. We wouldn't recommend that. I wouldn't really recommend it. Stress levels are pretty high.
And to finish then, what are the top bouquet trends for 2020, would you say?
I would say people generally like to have something a little bit glam.
Oh, glam.
A bit glam. Quite a lot of flowers. Mm-hmm. Not tons of foliage. Not big, wide, crazy foliage.
Right.
Wild style, which past few years has been a bit more. I love foliage.
It was quite organic, wasn't it, for a while, I suppose?
I think a little bit more glam and probably less foliage. A bit front facing.
Okay.
Yeah, and lots of beautiful textures, I would say. And colour. 100% colour.
I'm looking forward to that, I have to say.
And me.
I think, and also people want to know that it's locally grown if possible. That is a big thing that we are being asked. Really is like a big thing where they're coming from.
Yeah. Well, thanks so much for joining us. I've learned
for having me.
I
love it when we have somebody on. And I know. Like, you know, Myrtle and all that. Yeah. Still haven't forgot.
Gypsophilia smells like wet dog. What it looks like. Get your Febreze out.
But I will, as ever, add links in the show notes to everything we've talked about today. And make sure you check Sarah out at leafycouture.co.uk and visit the list for any other supplies you might need. And if you've enjoyed today's episode, please leave us a little 5-star rating. I haven't asked for one for ages, so that would be really nice. And share it with all your friends and family. And just to finish off, just to remind you, if you haven't signed up for our newsletter yet, you can do that and get a bonus podcast episode all about budgeting. So don't miss out on that. And that's it, I think.
Thank you. Thank you, Sarah.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
See you in a couple of weeks.
Bye.
Bye. This podcast was brought to you by Becky and Charlotte from Rock My Wedding, the UK's most influential wedding brand. For more content, visit rockmywedding.co.uk, follow us on Instagram at rockmywedding, or buy the book Your Day Your Way from Amazon or any leading book retailer. This podcast is produced by We Are The Clarks.